Steven, how you doing?
Doing great. Good to hear from you today.
I know that you've worked at some very small sites where you were the only person. You've worked at some extremely large sites where you were part of a very large team. Across that time, what's the most memorable story that's really stuck out for you?
I still remember one of the first jobs I had right out of college, working in a lab where we were processing infant umbilical cord blood. And we happened to ship a sample out, saved a kid's life, and the parents wrote me a letter. And I just felt like this is the best thing ever. From now on, everything I do needs to be something that helps people.
I think that people that don't have the opportunity to work in the clinical research industry, they have no idea what it's like to really dedicate your time to helping people. What do you find keeps you going when really dedicating yourself to this profession?
Well, first, I for some reason really like sorting things and putting things into some sort of order, bringing order to chaos, right? There's a some sort of odd appreciation I have for that.
I have the exact same problem. Just this past weekend, I went through my medicine cabinet and I sorted allergy relief from pain relievers, and it was the most satisfying, like exciting thing I've done in a while. What do you see as like the messiest part of clinical research?
Scheduling. You can schedule someone to show up at 11, and you're lucky if you get them to come in at 11:30.
Have you found any hacks that have allowed you to kind of maneuver around this? Because you're in a difficult position. You kind of have the clinicians on one side, you've got the patients over here, and you're trying to keep everybody happy, and that can be a little difficult. What is your approach to kind of managing that?
I tend to be fairly entertaining. With kids, it's easy. We have a toy room. I grab them a toy and start playing with them. And the next thing you know, 30 minutes have passed and they didn't even notice the difference.
Yeah, I think a lot of that is probably being really, really good at anticipating need
Right.
and knowing
On the
all
spot.
of the stakeholders. Yeah, knowing all the stakeholders enough to know what kind of motivates them, what they like, what they don't like. I describe clinical research to people that don't really understand it. It's like you've got a huge symphony and you're trying to get everybody just to sit down so you can just practice the piece. And you're playing the part of the conductor.
Gosh, I don't even think we're the conductor. We're just the person flipping the lights off and on to try to get people to sit in their seats. I don't know.
So looking at your LinkedIn profile, and there are three letters that kind of stick out to me. And those are FDA. And right next to that is the word audit. And then in front of that's the word successful.
Yes.
Tell us about, at least as much as you can, how have you actually gone through and successfully completed an FDA audit?
Well, gosh, I remember everyone running around like chickens with their head cut off the first time we had an FDA audit. I tend to be a center of calm in most crazy situations, and I found that that carries over really well to this. They are there to do a job, just like we're there to do a job. If we have done our job correctly, their job is easier. And so is ours once we get all of their questions and answers taken care of, right? If we've made every note and done everything the way we should have been doing, you're not going to have a problem with the FDA. It's when there's ambiguity, when there's stuff out there that isn't reported correctly, or we put out fires all the time. Things go wrong in my research all the time. A doctor forgot to sign something from 6 months ago. But the FDA isn't here yet, and I've written a note about it, letting everyone know that we found this. It wasn't signed correctly. It wasn't taken care of. It isn't necessarily done correctly, but we've all noted it. We've all noticed the problem, and we've made an effort to fix it in the future.
But it sounds like the major themes are keep calm and document every single thing you
Thing.
possibly can.
Sometimes it's ridiculous, the notes that you write, they'll never be seen again, they're never going to be important, but you never know.
Right. You never know. Better safe than sorry. So let's kind of shift gears a little bit. And I want to talk about clinical supplies, bulk supplies, red tiger top tube, 18 gauge needles, all of the things that your site gets externally to help you facilitate patient care.
So I'm currently sitting in my old office. I've been moved to a newer one under a parking garage. This one I always thought was a closet and now really is a closet. It's stacked floor to ceiling, probably against OSHA's regulation. I've got drawers full of lab kits and shelves full of lab kits. And it's not only just me. I actually share this with four other research coordinators.
What is your biggest pain point?
The biggest pain for me is when I don't have something I need.
And so how do you try to ensure that you have what you need? Is that just staying on top of your supply ordering?
Over-ordering. For several of my studies, our lab supply company has graciously, because they're children that we're working on, has given us these tiny little tubes that you pull out almost like a syringe to create a vacuum in them. They are terrific because they pull only a small volume. You know, kids have less blood. We can't pull quite as much out of them. So we're getting just what we need to do the testing. However, these tubes at times have come in very short supply. We were, of course, you know, involved in a study where enrollment is competitive. And we have, you know, we have six kids that we can put into it, but we're sharing 16 slots with 30 centers. So we're looking at the possibility of getting one, and we don't have a kit. So now we've lost that position. My center doesn't make money. I'm not helping a kid. And it's all because we didn't have the kit in time.
Wow. So, you know, it's not just oversupply. It's undersupply. It sounds like kit outages are, you know, something that you guys worry about because you could miss a patient enrollment opportunity.
Right. And in this particular study, you know, I'd already done probably at least 3 or 4 weeks worth of work, getting the study through our IRB, getting all the budgets done. If I don't get a subject in, we don't get paid. So when it comes down to, you know, the hard money and the numbers, I've got to try to do whatever I can to get this kid in just to kind of keep, you know, some money behind me so I have a job.
So let me ask you one last question. Where do you see clinical research in 10 to 20 years?
Well, I know that, you know, the cost of developing a drug is not going to be getting very much lower than it is. You know, whether sponsors know it or not, the fact that I order 25 to 50% more lab kits to run a study, that's going to affect the cost of them bringing the drug to market. And if they want to actually remain competitive in the market, they're going to want to lower that cost, right? So how is it effective for them to be spending this much money? I realize in the grand scheme of things, one or two kits here or there doesn't sound like very much, but we're talking about every center for every study, for every subject you've brought in, maybe ordering a third more kits for each subject. So that somewhere out there, we're going to find a way to better capture these lost costs and be able to transfer that in the end to the people who are buying these pharmaceuticals once they come to market.
You're looking forward to a future where drug development is cheaper and faster and more efficient. I think that's a goal that we all have. Stephen, it's been so great having you on today, learning from your perspective and hearing what you have to share.
Gosh, I wish you luck in getting this thing going and helping us to streamline everything that we do. It's frustrating to have too much, and it's even more frustrating to have too little.
This episode of Drowning in Research has been brought to you by Slope. Clinical trials require a lot of supplies, kits, drugs, and equipment. Slope tracks everything that powers your research. To learn more, please visit www.slope.com. Dot IO.